The headlines: the Iranian president says his country's punitive military action against Israel was limited and calculated. The United Nations says Israel's genocidal war on Gaza has killed 10,000 women and made 19,000 children orphans so far. And Hamas says recent reports about Israel torturing Palestinian detainees reaffirm the regime's war crimes and genocide against the people of Gaza. Top story for this half hour. The Iranian president says recent retaliatory attack by the country's military on Israeli targets in the occupied territories was a calculated and prudent move. Addressing a ceremony in Tehran marking National Army Day, Ebrahim Raisi said the operation shattered the Tel Aviv regime's hollow grandeur. He said the punitive action was taken on a limited scale just to punish the regime. But if it were a full-blown operation, he added, nothing would have been left for the Tel Aviv regime. He also warned that Israel will receive a harsh response in case of the slightest act of aggression against Iran. The president said Iran's military might can bring security to the whole region. He underlined that hatred toward the United States and Israel, as well as support for the resistance front, has grown more than ever. Well, to offer us more insight on today's events and the recent comments coming from the Iranian President Ebrahim Raisi, we're now joined by our very own Gisu Mishamhad, who's joining us in our studio in Tehran. Also, we have journalist, activist, and political analyst John Bosnich joining us from Belgrade. Welcome to the program, to the both of you, Gisu. Let's start off with you. Let's go over some of the key points made by the Iranian President regarding this day, of course, National Army Day, and of course, all of it was highlighted by the significance of this retaliatory response to the Israeli regime.
Exactly, Badia. After years of practicing what I would like to call strategic patience, Iran this time responded to Israeli aggression. And of course, that was because the Israeli regime crossed a very big red line by completely neglecting the Vienna Convention and the UN Charter and attacking a diplomatic mission of Iran in Damascus. And what we saw happening a couple of days ago was in response to that attack. And of course, I would like to point that this was not a military response per se, but basically a message sent to the Israeli regime that Iran's military might could be devastating, and they did get the message.
Sure. Mr. Bosnich, if you're with us, I want to get your thoughts on some of the comments made by the Iranian President Ebrahim Raisi, highlighting the scope of the operation, the retaliatory operation against the Israeli regime. He did specify that the operations were precise and prudent as well.
Well, first of all, we know that the number of projectiles fired by Iran was in the hundreds, and that the potential for killing in innocent people or military personnel was always there, and Iran obviously avoided that on purpose. So that's point number one. Point number two, the attack by Iran on the territory called Israel is a response to a direct Israeli military strike on the sovereign territory of Iran. When a strike is made against a consulate or an embassy, it doesn't matter where that consulate or embassy is located, the territory on which it sits is the sovereign territory of the country whose embassy it is. In other words, Israel's strike on the Iranian consulate was a strike at Iran. And under international law, Iran had the right to respond. So in these sequence of events, Iran has followed international law and Israel has not. And this cannot be stressed enough. We also know that these events did not come from nowhere. Israel has been conducting an indiscriminate mass killing that includes tens of thousands of civilians. And the response around the world, not just from Iran, is that Israel is committing what amounts to a genocide under the definition set down by the United Nations and international law. It couldn't be more clear.
So let's go back to what today means, the issue of Iran National Army Day and the significant advancements that the Islamic Republic has made. In that regard, the president said Iran's military can actually bring security to the whole region. Break that down for us as to what the president was alluding to.
Well, first of all, let's go back to when the army, the National Army Day in Iran was designated by the late founder of the Islamic Republic, Imam Khomeini, in 1979. And that was basically because of the army who were ordered to attack the people taking part in the demonstrations back then. And they decided to lay their arms down. They joined the people. And that is how the Islamic Republic of Iran, the revolution was actually successful, and the Islamic Republic of Iran was established. So basically, it owes a lot of its establishment to the army backing the nation, which was highlighted by the late Imam Khomeini back then. And ever since, this occasion has been an occasion to reflect on the situation, the position that the army takes, and the situation it puts in with respect to the Islamic Republic of Iran on an international scale. And adding to that is the eight-year Iraqi-imposed war. We do know that before the Islamic Revolution, the previous regime was completely relying on foreign countries, particularly the United States, to provide its military hardware and anything that it needed in terms of enhancing its military force. And it was even called the military force of the region by the U.S. president because they were providing Iran with the military hardware that it needed. What happened in the Iraqi-imposed war was that Iran realized that it needs to stand on its own two feet. And ever since, it has been relying only on homegrown capabilities in order to develop its military defense capabilities. And today what we see happening is only because Iran does not need any other foreign country in order to be able to defend its soil. And this is a clear message that not only the Israeli regime, but the entire world has received by this recent retaliatory attack.
Right. And Mr. Bosnich, I want you to weigh in on the special occasion that's taking place today, parades and ceremonies all across Iran, marking Iran National Army Day. Now, the highlight of all of this is the indigenous advancements and the homegrown capabilities of Iran in its military defensive doctrine and aspect. Break that down for us as to how important it is, despite all the sanctions and all the difficulties and hurdles that Iran has been facing for the past decades.
Well, this is a similar kind of result that happens in many cases where sanctions are unfairly and aggressively applied against a target nation picked by the Anglo-American Empire. I'm here in Belgrade, the former capital of Yugoslavia, the current capital of Serbia. And Belgrade and Serbia was under sanctions for years and years and years, and not all of those sanctions have yet been lifted. And I can tell you that what that did is it raised the resilience of the local people, it raised the self-sufficiency of the nation, and it raised the independence of the nation. And the same thing has happened with Iran. So what weapons they used against you to crush you actually made you stronger and made you more independent. And especially in the field of military, if you're not producing your own military defenses, you are always vulnerable to external attack. And now with the power projection that Iran has demonstrated by the bombardment of Israeli airspace, in effect, Iran has now warned Israel that the game is over. There's no longer one great giant who can crush anybody in the region, and it's going to have to be some kind of relationship that's based on respect for the sovereignty of other peoples.
Gisu, another thing that the Iranian president pointed out in his address today was that a resentment towards the United States and Israel has reached an all-time high, and with that, support for the resistance has also grown more than ever. Are we seeing this type of support specifically in the court of public opinion, as they're calling it? It's an astronomical level right now. The supporters of the Israeli regime, they're starting to feel that pressure and their weight bearing down on their shoulders, aren't they?
They definitely are, and we could sense that in the UNSC emergency meeting that Israel had demanded just a couple of nights ago, and they gathered in the United Nations Security Council basically trying to condemn Iran, but it was so difficult for them to do so, considering that they had to put this in the context that Israel had crossed a very big red line by attacking the Iranian consulate, and this was pointed out by all of those member states who were attending the UNSC, except for just a handful, a couple of countries who are the traditional allies of Israel, and obviously they were there simply to offer their support. But when a country is doing something so wrong that even its own allies have trouble defending it, well, that really says something. And international public opinion in this day and age is very difficult to affect by media propaganda campaigns, because in this day and age, information is so easily accessible to people all over the world, and people are even more media savvy, if you will, and they understand how media can affect their perception of what is happening, and they are seeking the truth, and when they do so, they definitely have access to many different means of communication. And we did see that night so many people in Iraq, in Syria, and even in Jordan cheering as they were watching those drones traveling through the sky, reaching the Israeli regime and the targets there. So this in and of itself, Bardia, shows that the public opinion, the international community, is quite aware of who is right and who is wrong.
Same question to you, Mr. Bosnich. Draw these parallels that we're seeing with the resentment towards the United States, the Israeli regime, the genocide that it's been carrying out for 6 months. Couple that with the support that the likes of the United States, France, Germany, the UK have been giving to the Israelis. And then as that resentment grows, the support for the resistance, as we've seen with these massive demonstrations worldwide, is growing as well. So break that down for us, how you view it. And also the million-dollar question here is, when will this public support actually translate into pressure on some of these governments to take action and at the first step, stop supporting the Israeli regime in this genocide against Palestinians?
Well, I think it's already starting to have some effect, because we're seeing that the responses from the Americans, who are basically Israel's military backer and military colony in one respect, Israel tells America what to do in Israel's interests through their Israel lobby inside the U.S. Congress. So we're seeing a weakening of U.S. support for Israel. We're seeing a weakening of regional support for Israel, and we're seeing a worldwide swell of anger over the indiscriminate killing of tens of thousands of innocent civilians. Does not matter what past Israel might refer to regarding World War II and so on. The conduct of the Israeli regime today is criminal. The actions that they are conducting today constitute genocide. And if the rest of the world is not going to react, it's obvious now that Iran is a major player in the region, and Iran is going to react just like America tries to do around the world. America has its responsibility to protect doctrine, and I think that Iran has now demonstrated that it is going to have a responsibility to protect the victims of Israeli aggression, and perhaps not only when Israel attacks the sovereign territory of Iran at a consulate or an embassy, but when Israel conducts genocide against occupied citizens inside that territory.
All right, we're going to leave it there. Thanks to John Bozic, journalist, activist, and political analyst, joining us from Belgrade. And thanks to our very own Gisu Misha Ahmadi joining us in our studio here in Tehran. Well, moving now to the Gaza Strip, where more deaths and destruction have been reported on day 194 of Israel's genocidal war on the besieged Palestinian territory. At least 11 people, most of them children, have been killed in an attack on Al-Marazi refugee camp in central Gaza. 9 Palestinians lost their lives in a strike on a police vehicle in Gaza City. 5 civilians were killed in the southern city of Rafah. Meanwhile, the UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees says it has found unexploded 1,000-pound bombs inside schools after Israel pulled troops out of Khan Yunis. The U.S. Israeli genocide has claimed over 33,800 lives since October the 7th, most of the victims are women and children. The Gaza health system has almost collapsed as hospitals are not spared from the attacks. The regime is also using famine as a weapon of war. Some 2 million Gazans are struggling to get access to food amid Israeli restrictions on humanitarian aid into the besieged territory. The Palestinian resistance movement Hamas has issued a statement in reaction to the reports about the Israeli regime torturing dozens of Palestinian detainees before releasing them on Monday.
The horrific testimonies documented by a large number of Palestinians recently released by the Zionist occupation army, including children as young as 12 years old, which confirmed their exposure to various types of torture, ill treatment, and deprivation of health care, is an affirmation of the brutality of this criminal army and the violations it commits against defenseless civilians within the framework of war crimes and genocide against our people in the Gaza Strip.
The statement came after Gaza's Crossings Authority released testimonies of some 150 recently freed Palestinian detainees uncovering their painful ordeal during detention. It called on international human rights bodies to take action to reveal the fate of thousands of Palestinians kidnapped during the Israeli raids across the Palestinian territories. That's a wrap for now. Bye, everybody.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. all produced by IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
Armed Zionist settlers blocked roads, vandalized property, and scuffled with Palestinians around towns and villages in the occupied West Bank recently. The Palestinian Health Ministry said a 17-year-old Palestinian named Omar Hamed died of his wounds hours after he was wounded by a settler's gunfire in the village of Beitin near Ramallah. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Palestine Chronicle wrote, at times, accompanied by Israeli forces, armed settlers have attacked several villages, including Al-Mughayr, Abu Falah, Duma, Al-Sawiyeh, and Hubara recently. Mobs of Zionist settlers have continued their rampage across the occupied West Bank, killing another young Palestinian man and setting fire to homes, as well as attacking an ambulance. The Ministry of Health confirmed the killing of 17-year-old Omar Ahmad Hamed due to critical injuries sustained during an attack by Zionist settlers on the village of Beitin, northeast of Ramallah, reported the official Palestinian news agency Wafa. At times accompanied by the Zionist regime forces, armed settlers have attacked several villages including Al-Mughayr, Abu Falah, Duma, Al-Sawiyeh, and Hubara recently. Also recently, settlers attacked vehicles of Palestinians near the village of Dar Salah as well as Al-Jaba in Beit Lahm, causing damage to some of them, Wafa reported. Recently, settlers set fire to a vehicle belonging to Ahmad Hussein Abu Mohsen and destroyed the power station that supplies electricity to the residents of Ain Ghazal community in the northern Jordan Valley, northeast of the West Bank. Various areas in the Jordan Valley witnessed a wave of attacks by Zionist settlers, including the burning of homes and vehicles, and that's according to Wafa News Agency. The Palestine Red Crescent Society, PRCS, said Israeli regime forces attacked an ambulance and smashed the vehicle's windows in the town of Duma in the Nablus district. Recently, the Zionist regime forces blocked the entrances to the village of Al-Mughayr, northeast of Ramallah, preventing anyone from entering or leaving. Jihad Abu Aliyah, 25, was shot and killed by live ammunition fired at his home when Zionist settlers stormed Al-Mughayr. Around 25 Palestinians were injured in that attack. Zionist settlers also fired at PRCS ambulance on its way to the town. Recently, 6 residents of the town were injured by live ammunition, one critically in the head, in an attack by settlers on the village. The assailants also set fire to several homes and vehicles and also burnt a firefighting vehicle en route to extinguish the flames. Zionist settlers also attacked shepherds in the Khalila near the village, pelting them with stones. The main entrances to the towns of Turmus, Aya, and Senjil, located northeast of Ramallah, were also closed off by the Zionist regime forces recently. According to the official Resistance News Network, resistance fighters opened fire on Jamala military checkpoint as well as the Shaka checkpoint near Jenin. A statement by the Salafit Brigade Resistance Group also said a female troop was shot at the entrance of the town of Sinjil. The Palestinian resistance movement Hamas recently called on the Palestinian Authority and its security forces to protect Palestinian people amid the escalation of settler violence in the West Bank. In a statement, Hamas said that the escalation of frenzied attacks carried out by settler militias are war crimes committed by the Zionist enemy. The statement also called on the PA and its security forces to practice the role entrusted to them to protect our people suffering under the way of daily raids and invasions, operations of killing and arrests, and daily crimes of the settlers, unquote. Wafa reported that according to the Palestinian Ministry of Health, hospitals in the West Bank have treated more than 55 injuries, tens of which were serious, most of them from live bullets in the recent escalation. This is in addition to dozens of injuries treated by ambulance crews at the scene. More than 463 Palestinians have been murdered by the Zionist regime forces and settlers' gunfire in the occupied West Bank since October 7th, according to the ministry, the report added.
Doing us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Inhumane and unprecedented atrocities and crimes by the Israeli regime raging against Palestinians in Gaza right after a few hours of respite on Saturday night when Gazans joyfully watched Iranian missiles and drones flying over the head toward targets inside the occupied lines. The West Bank has also seen a surge in violence both by Israeli settlers and occupation forces. Meanwhile, the UN is complaining that Israel prevents its investigators from collecting evidence and talking to the witnesses of the war. Welcome to the Spotlight. I'm your host, Behrouz Najafi, and these are our guests in this episode. Daniel Kavala, human rights lawyer, joining us from Pittsburgh. Also with us is Hossein Al-Mukhaji, activist and political commentator out of Sana'a.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Welcome to the show, both gentlemen. Beginning with Daniel, you know, yesterday a number of bodies were found in mass graves in Gaza's Al-Shifa hospital with even medical equipment attached to their bodies, you know. And they're said to have been killed by IUF execution style. So another proof of the Israeli ethnic cleansing, which has not been stopped yet. Let us see why this hasn't stopped as of yet.
Well, for a few reasons. I think Israel's decided that they are going to use the opportunity of October 7th to carry out their final solution, which is to get rid of the Palestinian people from historic Palestine, first in Gaza, and then I think, you know, they have designs on the West Bank as well. And they're not stopping it because the U.S. won't stop them. I mean, the U.S. could end this tomorrow if they really wanted to. Israel depends on the United States for about 70% or so of its military hardware and munitions. And while Joe Biden wrings his hands every other day and says he feels bad about the civilians being killed in Gaza, he continues to send major armaments to Israel, including 2,000-pound bombs, which most military experts will say should not be used in an urban setting like Gaza. So that's where we're at. And the rest of the world, you know, sadly, most of the rest of the world isn't doing enough to stop this. Obviously, there's notable exceptions. My brother from Yemen, for example, the Yemenis are doing wonderful work in the Red Sea, Hezbollah. Well, and what Iran did on Saturday was important. In fact, I understand that Iran's attack, Israel's admitted that they have postponed their attack on or their land invasion of Rafah because of that. So, but most of the world, particularly in the West, is doing nothing to stop this, and that's why it continues.
Okay. Now, Hossein Al-Bukhaiti, Israel is preventing UN investigators from speaking to witnesses and victims of the October 7th operation, and this is what the former UN Rights Chief Navi Pillay is saying, and she's now chairing a three-person probe. The question is, why should Israel block the probe? After all, they are saying that we are the moral, maybe the most moral army, as they claim.
Because actually they are doing so because it's actually the opposite. They are the one who are committing genocide. That's why they don't want any international investigation team to be sent to Gaza or any other area, because it will clearly prove that Israel has committed a genocide. And we remember as well, as an example, in Yemen, during the 9 year or 8 year of Saudi Warren blockade, which was backed by the United States and UK, United States has prevented any investigation, international investigation team to go to Yemen to investigate the crime, because they know that the fines will actually condemn the United States, because all the weapons was used is as well provided to Saudi by United States. It's exactly the same story as has been repeated in Iraq, in Afghanistan, as well during the terrorist war in Syria against the Syrian army, in Libya, and now what's happening in Sudan is all with the support either of the United States or country that's loyal to the United States, like United Arab Emirates. That's why United States actually will keep continue to provide Israeli with weapons, because that is their best or greatest ally in our region, and they were as well not happy with the attack by Iran against Israel. And soon after that, many Western countries has condemned this attack, and they have called the United Nations Security Council to meet. But, I mean, what Israel has done, Israel has been targeting Iranian civilians and Iranian personnel, and the last attack that targeted the consulate. That's why I think that United States actually and Israel only will respect the one who will retaliate, and that's why it is clearly shown that Israel can continue with their crime, because they are getting a huge support from those countries, especially United States and UK.
Okay. Now, Daniel, UN Human Rights Office spokeswoman, speaking of dozens of Palestinians getting wounded by armed settlers and also occupation forces, and this is happening in West Bank. Of course, today we had a dozen children again getting killed in Gaza. Hundreds of homes, you know, other buildings, cars, they've all been torched in the West Bank recently. At least 468 Palestinians have been killed by the IOF and also settlers across the West Bank since October 7th. So why should Israeli forces help the settlers during their raids instead of stopping them?
Well, because they support what they're doing, and this has been happening for a long time. These are old-fashioned pogroms, right, which we usually associate that term with the terrorist attacks against Jews in Europe, right, in the early 20th century. But these are for pogroms against Palestinian people. And the goal of those pogroms is to terrorize the Palestinians in the West Bank, to force them out of their homes, off their land, and frankly, out of Israel. They would like to push the Palestinians in the West Bank into Jordan. There's already, what, 1 million Palestinians living in Jordan as it is. So again, the military shares the goal of the settlers to do that. And so they either just stand by while the settlers carry out these pogroms, or they actually participate in it. And or arrest Palestinians who try to resist.
Mm-hmm. Now, Hussein, let me quote UN Human Rights Office spokeswoman Ravina Shamdasani. She's saying that Israel, as the occupying power, must take all measures in its power to restore and ensure as far as possible public order and safety in the occupied West Bank. And this obligation includes protecting Palestinians from settler attacks, which they're not, and also ending unlawful use of force against Palestinians by occupation forces. And is there any way, this is not happening, this is what should be there, but is there any way, in your opinion, to force the Tel Aviv regime to act this way?
I didn't think so, because we know that human rights watch, as they call in Israel, actually they could actually as well condemn Israel either without any investigation held by a human rights group or any other international investigation team, because just you can see the footage on the media, and as well the amount of killing. United Nations have a great role, especially the UNRWA in Gaza, but they haven't actually helped in actually bringing Israel into court. And as you mentioned, what was happening in the West Bank, we know that the so-called Palestinian government has recognized Israel, and Israel recognized it, and as well it was recognized by many Western countries. So the war on Gaza is not only, as they say, because of Hamas. They have been actually taking land by settlers in the West Bank. They have been kidnapping Palestinian people in their thousands, and as well since October 7, the Israeli regime has killed and injured hundreds of Palestinians in the West Bank. The main idea of the existence and the making of Israel is by those settlers. That's why Israel will keep continue to support those settlers, to grab more land, to attack the Palestinian. I know that the international community and as well the human rights or any other group, if they didn't help the Iraqi to bring any case against the invasion of Iraq, where millions of people has been killed or injured based on a lie about weapons of mass destruction. I think that all our nation and Muslim nation and Arab nation, they should the one be taking the step, not only waiting for the international community to condemn Israel or to condemn United States or to bring them into court. They should actually fight back, because you will only get respect if you retaliate. And I just want to mention what actually was clear after October 7th, that Israel actually is really weak. They couldn't expect that major attack against Israeli army around Gaza. And as well, it's clearly after those months of attack on Gaza, they couldn't eliminate, as they say, Hamas. As well, they couldn't free the people who are prisoner of war taken by Hamas. And to show that it is only thanks to the United States help to Israel, they could actually continue for this long month. And one final thing, it was clearly as well that Israel cannot, as an example, when it regarding to Iran, they cannot actually target Iran by themselves. It should be with the green light and help from United States and UK. But after Iran retaliation, it is clearly as well that either to protect themselves, the Israeli regime cannot do that alone. They can only do it with the United States and UK and with the help of neighboring country like in Jordan. That's why I think those all country and should take up the step against Israel and to fight Israel, because you are not going to get your land back. You are not going to get Israel into court only if you defeat the Zionist state of Israel.
Mm-hmm. Now, Daniel, let's get back to what Judge Pillay said, the one in charge of this probe into the October 7th attack. She's saying that the probe commission has shared more than 5,000 documents with the ICC in The Hague, collected between October and December 2023. It's also due to present its first set of findings to the Human Rights Council in June. So international tribunals like the ICC and ICJ, are they capable of bringing these Israeli criminals to justice?
I think probably not, or I don't think they have, they really don't have the means to do that is the problem, right? You really need some sort of police powers to do that, and you would need to probably have Security Council authorization to have some sort of peacekeeping or military force to do that, and the Security Council will never do that because the U.S. will veto that such an action. So, sadly, I don't think you're going to see Israelis individually prosecuted for war crimes. Basically, the West position is that the ICC is for other people. That's for, and at this point, it's for Africans, right? The ICC's only successfully prosecuted Africans at this point, and it's not for the people of the West to have to be subjected to their jurisdiction.
Okay. Now, Hossein, what do you think? I mean, if these international bodies and tribunals are not able to bring all those criminals and charters to justice, what can? Maybe what you Yemenis are doing is the right way, huh? Using the language of force?
You just imagine that Yemen is still at war with Saudi Arabia and United Arab Emirates, but we have this truce for more than 1 year and a half, and after more than 250,000 Saudi airstrike and a blockade and a bad economic situation in Yemen because of this blockade and war, Yemeni actually didn't think twice when they saw what's happening to the Palestinian and that the international community has let them down. They know they felt what the Palestinian is going through, because we have gone through that for almost 9 years. That's why they took a decision to declare war against Israel and to target its ship in the Red Sea and as well in the Gulf of Aden. And this actually is damaging really bad the Israeli regime, as many international reports has said and many media outlets. As an example, Eilat port has been closed. So I think that the countries like Yemen or any other country, if they will take the step at least to cut ties with the Zionist state of Israel, or not to allow Israeli ship to use their seas and their waters, I think that if they cannot bring Israel actually to court, they could actually stop, force Israel to stop its genocide against the Palestinian, and as well it will force it to withdraw, and as well to build and to rebuild Gaza, because what the Israeli regime now want, they want, they might be okay like to withdraw from Gaza, and they want to release all prisoner of war that's in the hand of Hamas, but they don't want to release the Palestinian prisoners, which more than 7,000, which most of them has been taken from the West Bank. But what the Hamas actually as well is doing, they have refused all pressure, either from Qatar and Egypt and any other country, and they I think that the military wing in Hamas is the one now who is making the decision, because they know if they will let Israel go away doing what they did in Gaza, they will do it again, and they might do it at one point in the same way in the West Bank. That's why Yemen has actually continued its war. And as an example, let's say that the United States, when they were actually helping the Saudi against the war in Yemen, and as well supplying them with all weapons and preventing any solution between Yemen and Saudi Arabia, as soon as Yemenis has targeted Israel, United States has sent its delegation to Oman in Muscat, and they have requested to the Omani that they will solve the issue and the war in Yemen, and they will bring peace in Yemen, and salary will be paid, and the economic situation will be rebuilt in Yemen. Why? Because but they asked to stop the attack against Israel and to lift the blockade in the Red Sea. This show you that only by force you can get what's actually matter, and you can get what's good for your country.
Yeah, interesting. Okay. Now, Daniel, the region, this part of the world, is tense and volatile, and Saudi Foreign Minister Faisal bin Farhan Al Saud says that a de-escalation must be everybody's priorities, because this part of the world cannot afford another conflict. And has also stressed ceasefire in Gaza and complained that international efforts toward establishing ceasefire are wholly insufficient, in his opinion. So two aspects is, what does it take to de-escalate the region? What can be done to stop the genocide of Palestinians?
Well, I agree that it will not and cannot be stopped without force. It's very clear Israel's ready to go all the way with this genocide and ethnic cleansing. And I think that there will have to be, I think Israel has to be militarily defeated. That's my view. They will not stop otherwise. I have great fear that Israel may use nuclear weapons if it comes to that. I mean, Israel just seems, the government of Israel is unhinged. It just seems there are no limits to what it thinks it will do and thinks it can do to defend Israel. And so, yeah, ultimately, I think there will have to be a military defeat of Israel.
All right. Now, Hossein, what's your opinion regarding de-escalation and trying to kind of restore some common peace to the West Asia region? Is it possible?
No, I didn't think with Israel and with as well Netanyahu leading the Israeli government, he will not stop, because he is facing actually charges of corruption, of all those type of things. That's why he will continue actually to target Gaza, and they might as well enter Rafah. And as your guests have said, the only thing to stop Israel is by force. Was taken by force will only be returned by force. And the one who actually must de-escalate is the Israeli regime. They are the one who is actually invaded Gaza. They are the one who killed more than 33,000 Palestinian civilians, most of them women and children, and have injured more than 70,000, have destroyed an entire cities. That's why I think the only thing that will bring Israel to its knee, or will bring Israel to do what Hamas request in those peace talk with the help of Egypt and Qatar, is to continue their attack against Israel, and as well from countries and the axis of resistance in Iraq, in Lebanon, and as well in Yemen. They should widen their attack against Israel, and by doing so, this is the only way to deal with Israel, and this is the only way actually to help the Palestinian.
Okay, Daniel, judges, attorneys, UN experts, they're all saying that Israel's criminal acts, murders, unlawful killings, you know, they need to be brought to justice. And how? They're saying that there should be a judicial process that complies with international human rights standards, and that should be done promptly, impartially, independently, effectively, and in a transparent way. But the question is, how?
Yeah, again, I don't see that happening short of a military defeat of Israel, you know. And even then, what body would do it? The International Criminal Court? I don't think so. You could set up a special tribunal, for Israel and the occupied Palestinian territories, but that would be done through the Security Council, and the United States would never assent to that. Mm. Maybe the Arab League could do it. But it's got to be done outside, the usual way, because the UN system, it's broken, and the U.S. has guaranteed that it's broken. It's certainly broken to deal with these types of situations, because the U.S. in particular doesn't want it to be done. So if it is to be done, it will have to be done outside the UN system.
All right, on that note, we come to the end of this episode of The Spotlight. Let me thank my guests, Daniel Kovalik in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and Hossein Al-Bukhaiti in Sana'a, Yemen.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard by the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz, every day, from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Southern Africa can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz, every day, from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAD 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.ir/en. Now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
An-Naqi means the pure, the immaculate, the clean. Al-Hadi means the guide. All the Imams came for guidance.
As-salamu alaykum ya ahla bayt al-nubuwa wa mawdha' al-risala wa mukhtalaf al-malaw.
Peace be upon the directors of right guidance, the lanterns in darkness, the patterns of piety.
This is Dialogue, an introduction into the most important dialogues and conversations of Imam Ali ibn Muhammad al-Hadi alayhi salam. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Imam Ali ibn Muhammad al-Hadi alayhi salam was the pure direct descendant of the Messenger of Allah sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi. He was the 10th divinely appointed successor. He was the 10th divinely appointed imam. He was the 10th divinely appointed trustee to the final Messenger of Allah, the Holy Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi. A great number of Muslims believed in the imamah of Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam, and they found it obligatory upon them to follow and obey Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam. A vast amount of legal dues and monies that must be given to the imam were carried to Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam, as he was the financial epicenter of the Shia. And it was partly due to this financial leadership of Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam that governmental investigators and policemen reported in detail to the Abbasid Caliph al-Mutawakkil. And so al-Mutawakkil Abbasi was the most bitter enemy of not only the Alawis and the followers of Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam, but he was a bitter enemy of Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam himself. At this moment, we invite you to listen to parts of the Arabic text of Ziyarat Jamiatul Kabira by Imam Hadi alayhi salam, along with its English translation. Please stay tuned.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. As-salamu ala a'immatil huda wa masabih at-tuja wa a'lam at-tuqa wa dawin nuha.
In the name of Allah, the Most Compassionate, the Most Merciful. Peace be upon the directors of right guidance, the lanterns in darkness, the patterns of piety, the owners of understanding, the endued with thoughts, the havens of the peoples, the inheritors of the prophets, the perfect specimen, the most excellent call in the arguments of Allah against the inhabitants of the world, the hereafter and the former world. Allah's mercy and blessings too be upon you all.
Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Welcome back. It's an honor and a blessing to have you with us. You're listening to Dialogue on IRIB English Radio. So we're talking about the dialogues of Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam. Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam, of course, he lived in an era in which there was a lot of different theological and jurisprudential and philosophical debates amongst the Muslims. Now, on one hand, we find that the Abbasid Empire and the Abbasid Caliphs, they had a big hand in pushing forth this differentiation and this separation and this creation of different schools of theological, jurisprudential, and philosophical thought amongst the Muslims. Some historical analysts say that this was done in order to keep the Muslim masses busy in these matters so that the Abbasid caliphs could easily run their empire without any revolting or uprising on behalf of the Muslims. Now, there's an interesting dialogue that occurs between one of these companions of Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam and His Eminence, the 10th divinely appointed Imam. And here we find that the conversation is dealing with the ability of a human being and how Allah the Almighty tries or examines or puts into examination the human being via the abilities that they have. And so what is really happening is that according to our ability and our capability and our capacity, Allah the Almighty is testing us and putting us into various kinds of examination. And so when talking about this idea of being tried or examined according to one's ability by the Almighty Allah, Imam al-Hadi brings forth a verse from the Holy Quran in this conversation. And he says that the Holy Word and the Holy Quran says, "And verily we shall try you till we know those of you who strive hard for the sake of Allah and the patient, and till we test your record. And so it's interesting here that Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam, he speaks about this verse, saying that first and foremost, a human being goes through trials in this world. And the reason for the trials is sometimes, you know, something that we don't think about is why does the Almighty Allah put us into trials or puts us into this examination?